If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
And welcome to Women Patriots. I'm Brenda Ward, your host. And tonight, on behalf of all of the shows here on CNR Network, we'd like to take a moment of silence so that we might say a prayer for those families who had lost loved ones, those who were injured, and those who were just had their lives totally disrupted by this bombing yesterday. So if you'll join me, we'll take about a 30-second moment of silence. And as we send up prayers and our thoughts out to our fellow Americans in Massachusetts, we also want to recognize the wonderful job that the first responders did there, the police, the firefighters, the doctors, the hospitals, all, and how quickly and how many lives that they saved just by responding so quickly to this horrible, cowardly incident. The people who do these kind of things here and in other countries that attack innocent children and women who are doing nothing but going about their daily task when there is no active war, active battleground going on, and they just choose to somehow make themselves feel important by inflicting damage on innocents. Are cowards. They're cowards and they're crazy. I don't care who this person was. I don't care what group he may be affiliated with, as of this point we don't know. You know, if he is some kind of right-wing nut, I condemn him just as thoroughly as I condemn the extreme Islamic or the leftist Occupy Wall Street people, such as the Aurora, Colorado shooter was. This is nonsense. This is cowardly. This is crazy. And as Americans, not as Democrats and Republicans, right-wing, leftists, as Americans, we condemn this type of action here and elsewhere in the world. I wish I could say that, you know, this is the last of this incident. But unfortunately, I think we're going to have to prepare ourselves for more and more of this kind of thing to happen. And I say that for several reasons. Number one, this president has not reacted to acts of terror such as what happened in Benghazi, where our ambassador was murdered for the first time in 30 years. An active duty ambassador was murdered by extreme Islamics in a planned, coordinated attack that left our CIA agents and our American citizens without any backup. They watched this all night long without any backup because our president was, one, either too slow to react, or just didn't care. Not only that, you know, there's indications that there's terrorists south of our border, and this president has slackened our border security, and all in the name of sequester, they have furloughed 60,000 Border Patrol agents. But they never secured the border in the first place. And not only that, if you all remember, the 9/11 attacks, 15 of 19 of those were Saudi Arabia nationals, okay? And in March, our government was working out a deal to expedite the travel for certain members or certain people from Saudi Arabia, that the Prince of Saudi Arabia got to decide who they were. So unfortunately, I can't sit here and tell you that this type of cowardly act won't be seen again in this country. Because no matter how vigilant we are, when somebody leaves a backpack with a pressure cooker in it on a sidewalk, you know, we can't stop 100% of these things. The only thing you can do is secure your borders, for one. And that includes getting rid of people who are not here legally, because we know who they are. And yet this administration released thousands of illegals back into the population. You know, they're no more interested in the sovereignty of our country or the safety of our people when you let... You encourage illegals to come here. They're illegal. They don't help our society. But with that, I'm going to bring in my co-host, Barbara Buffing. Barbara, you got some kind of air noise going on behind you.
Oh, I know. My air conditioner. I have to keep
on.
Yeah, the pollen, the pollen is so bad here. I have to keep it on.
Oh, okay. It was just like this big rushing. That's why I muted you for a minute, because it was like this big rushing sound, and it was like, what? Okay. It's not warm enough for air conditioning here, so just don't rub that in too much.
Well, it's warm. It's just the pollen is so bad that, and my husband and I, we're both react very badly to the pollen. It's so bad that.
Okay. Well, hey, what do you have to say as far as my opening statements there? What do you think?
You know, I just can't. I was numb yesterday after I heard the news in Boston. Just totally numb. And it really brought me back to 9/11/01 when the Twin Towers got it. And all I really wanted to do was cry and hold my girl. And it's just so, it's such a horrific thing that these morons that, well, maybe it's Islam, or maybe it's the right wing.
Don't know.
That got me so pissed that I tweeted out, like, a nasty little note to CNN. And then
Michael Moore.
And then I emailed CNN.
Uh-huh.
And I emailed them, you know, this is what a right wing, you know, and I put that in quotes, this is what a right wing extremists think.
Exactly.
And then I did the, we respect the Constitution. I did the Frederick Douglass for respect the Constitution. Oh, geez, my head hurts. Individual responsibility. Oh gosh, I can't even think of the other two now.
I'd help you out, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
less government for sure. But then you were talking about President Obama and his and the Benghazi deal.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it scares me to think how he's going to react to this, because we were promised justice on this attack that happened on September 11th in Benghazi. Have you seen any?
Yeah, no. Well,
no.
You know, this is what, okay, there was a petition that had gone around to write your Congress and my House representative about getting, like, a Watergate board together.
Right.
And I sent it. And as a matter of fact, just today, this idiot that is my House of Representatives sends me an email. And let me go ahead and read that. Thank you for contacting me to support House Resolution 36, which would establish a select committee to further investigate the Benghazi attack. It is good to hear from you, and I appreciate the opportunity to clarify my views on this subject. As you know, several separate investigations and hearings were held to explore the causes of the security breach at the U.S. consulate in Benghazi and to make recommendations for action. The House Oversight Committee and Government Reform Committee held hearings on the attack. The House Foreign Affairs Committee received testimony from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. The Federal Bureau of Investigation is conducting a criminal inquiry into the deaths of the ambassador of Ambassador Chris Stevens and staff. And the State Department has investigated security lapses in the consulate compound. The Obama administration has also provided thousands of documents and transcripts to members of Congress and the intelligence committees, and Congress has appropriated additional funding to bolster security at embassies throughout the world. The State Department investigation conducted by an Independent Accountability Review Board, ARB, revealed major errors of judgment which led to the resignation of several officials, including the Assistant Secretary of Diplomatic Security. The ARB report was also found systematic failures and leadership and management deficiencies. The State Department and the State Department and recommended 29 steps to increase coordination between different bureaus within the state, bolstered security procedures overseas for our developments and other government personnel, and improve intelligence gathering and threat analysis.
They must think we're stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, because we knew this stuff, and this stuff is not satisfactory.
Oh, no. These steps are either already implemented or process of being implemented. And you can read a full report here. So he gave me the website. While some have continued to question the validity of the investigation, I have yet to see any credible evidence from reputable sources suggesting that any border cover-up of the event and decisions leading up to the security breach occurred. In moments of national tragedy such as this, I believe we should be setting politics aside and working on a bipartisan basis to identify what went wrong, hold the necessary people accountable, and to do what is required to prevent such tragedies from recurring. In any case, Benghazi, these goals have been achieved.
Oh, no. Wow, he's clueless.
Absolutely.
Wow. There are 30 witnesses that nobody has talked to yet and that are not allowed to speak. Now, if that doesn't say cover up, I don't know what does. And there's a lot more than that with this Benghazi thing. If you people haven't heard this, just go to the conservativenationradio.org, click on Women Patriots. I have a Benghazi link there about all the questions that have not yet been answered. This was a huge cover-up. Who is this guy? Is he a Democrat, Republican, or Barbara?
Wow. No, he's a Democrat. He's a piece of crap here who's been in office too long.
It reminds me of the letter. Okay, I wrote a letter on the guns to the semi-senators, the House members, and to the president. I got the form letter from the White House telling me why it was so important that we have background checks. You know what I did? And, of course, okay, anybody listening out there, if they come for me, okay, this is why. I went to the White House site and I said, I want to know what part of thou you shall not infringe on my right to bear arms that you don't understand.
Good.
And I said, I don't want a form letter. I want an answer to my question. So anyway, they may come and get me.
No.
But you know, I don't want to hear your ideas because I already know what you think. But what you think is not what is right.
I got to excuse me a second. My husband just handed me a note. He said, breaking news.
Yes.
An envelope sent to Senator Wicker, Republican of Mississippi, tested positive for ricin.
Yep. I read that before we came on the air. And I was trying to look him up because I don't know what his voting record is or anything. But, yes, it did not make it to his office. It was found in an outside mailing facility, but it has been determined that there was ricin sent to Representative
Wicker.
What was his first name? Robert? I had it written down. I lost it already. But
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's okay. But yes, that is breaking news, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody else is getting those envelopes. Or if he just ticked off some crazy person. Again, crazy people. Who does this stuff? You know, really. Let's send ricin to this representative. Really?
It's ridiculous. And then, you know, with all this other stuff going on.
Yeah.
They've got the gun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guns are the big issue.
That bill is going to be voted on, or actually debated tomorrow.
The Senate does not have the votes. They are two votes shy. So what we need everybody listening to do is call your senator or get online, go to the NRA site. They have it where you can send to all the senators, of your senators and House members, to not infringe on our rights. So you need to be signing these petitions. You need to be on the phone calling these people because they don't have the votes. And we need to make sure they continue to not have the votes for their national gun registration, which is definitely an infringement on our rights to carry. So, but yeah, it's just crazy, Barbara. You get these form letters that say a lot of words to say nothing, and they don't answer your specific questions that you have. So it is very frustrating. But as you know, it's pretty clear that the switch is on to conservativenationradio.org. And if you have any doubts, just check out our new Saturday show with internet radio veteran Robert Garding. The Newswise Conservatism Show now comes to you on conservativenationradio.org every Saturday at 4 Eastern, 3 Central. After years hosting the Newswise Conservatism Show, Robert has a big following, so listen Saturday and you'll find out why. Thousands love his brand of Newswise Conservatism, and you will too. The Newswise Conservatism Show with Robert Garding, Saturdays at 4 Eastern, 3 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. But I want to go back to this part, Barbara, where, what's his goofball name on MSNBC? Chris Matthews is saying that anytime these bombings, if they're domestic, tend to be the right wingers. Now, he tried to walk it back. But I would draw everybody's attention back to the 70s when these bombings were going on. And it was not right-wingers. It was the Marxist anti-government Bill Ayers terrorist, domestic terrorist, Obama's crony friend who babysat for his daughters. who gave a lecture to university students saying that America's game is over and another world is coming. This man also gives seminars for the teachers of our unions, okay? He spoke at the University of Oregon last week on the subject of teaching and organized for social justice. His speech was not free of the radical sentiments he is well known for espousing, especially in company of America's youth. He spoke to the end of America, a new world, and what our role ought to be. Okay, Chris Matthews, do your homework. The people who have bombed in this country, except for maybe Timothy McVeigh, who was more of an anti, I don't know what Timothy McVeigh was, but, and you know, but he's not, when they refer to right wing, we are mostly, a lot of us are Christians. We don't believe in this violent activity.
Right.
And I'm sick and tired of them just throwing this out like we're some kind of evil people. Because we're not.
Right.
And yet they have known terrorists in their party that they exalt and they promote to these positions. And yet you don't see that in the Republican Party.
Right.
It's very frustrating.
It really is. And that's why I got so mad yesterday and I wrote my little note to CNN.
Yeah.
It's
we got to start calling them out on this craziness. We have to call them out every time, because even in Colorado, they tried to blame it on right-wing guy. Guess what? Occupy Wall Street. Guess what? Democrat. You know, Sandy Hook, anti-Bush, hated Bush, Democratic parents. Okay? The terrorists in this country, the actual physically violent people, are not the Republicans.
Right.
We don't promote violence as a way to get our message across.
Right.
Now, yes, we talk about anti-government because the Constitution says, well, the Declaration, when it becomes necessary to replace because it's not listening to you, this is what our founding father said as an example and gave us the blueprint and the means to make sure that what's happening right now never happens. And yet we're the ones being labeled the terrorists because we're willing to defend those rights that were granted to us that are the law of the land. Gun rights are the law of the land. It's the Constitution. It's a constitutional right.
Yeah.
And what don't they get about that? What don't they get? I had somebody, some liberal comment, you know, well, it says well-regulated. It says well-regulated militia. It didn't say government regulating people with guns. You know, a well-regulated militia, which is the body of people in a certain state being necessary to the defense of the state, not the government.
Right.
You know, these people twist and turn. But the bottom line says, I have the right to keep, I have the right to bear arms, and those rights shall not be infringed, which means you should not be put up any barriers to my doing that. Go ahead.
I put on CNR's, not the website, but the Facebook page, and somebody was like arguing with me because there's more people killed in car accidents than there are by guns.
Right.
So the person who wrote it up, they had, you know, a good argument. So I posted it. And somebody kept coming back at me, and I'm like, you're God-given right. And I had to stop because I was getting really annoyed. It's like,
sometimes it's just better.
Do you ever get those gut feelings? Those gut feelings are from God saying, don't do this, something bad's going to happen. Or do this because this is the way this is what I want you to learn.
Right.
Or something, God gives you those gut feelings. That's what is intended as our God-given right. Now, if somebody were to come and harm me, my family or me, you're damn straight. I'd be the first one to shoot if I had a gun in my hand.
Yes. And you know, driving is not a right. It's a privilege.
Exactly.
Of course, they didn't even have cars back in that day. So.
You're exactly right. And people mistake that stuff all the time.
They do. Because the God-given rights are to the pursuit of, not the guarantee of,
right,
life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it doesn't guarantee those things.
Right.
You know, but you have the right to pursue those things. Everybody has the right to pursue those things. And they don't understand. Either they don't know, or they don't care, or they think it's outdated. But in true reality, it's one of probably the most well-written documents ever. At this point, I want to say we have a special guest coming on tonight to speak about women in combat. She is an Iraqi veteran who has the unique perspective of having been in combat with the Marines, with men. And she's going to have some things to say on women in combat. And we're going to have her on Women Patriots very shortly. Right now, we're going to take a quick break, and we shall return.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationradio.org, you're a conservative. You love America and our Constitution just like we do. And we're not terrorists. Since that's the case, you're going to want a Supply Depot to get everything from books to bumper stickers and patriotic T-shirts to flags. Your pipeline to that good stuff is right here on conservativenationradio.org. Just go to our website, conservativenationradio.org, click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag, proudly display your love for America and the conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org, click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, real conservatism for real conservatives.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan.
So, do you like it?
Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
You're listening to Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, The Beauty and the Brain, on conservativenationradio.org.
Well, welcome back to Women Patriots on conservativenationradio.org. I'm Brenda Ward, your host. And our special guest is in the studio. She is a former Iraqi veteran and a Marine. And so we're going to welcome her to the show. Let's bring her live. Well, maybe. Hey, Barbara.
Hello.
Is Jude ready?
She is. She's
okay.
With us.
All right.
Hi,
hello.
Jude,
hi. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Absolutely.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, welcome so much to the show. Why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into this discussion a little more.
Firstly, a little semantic thing. Iraqi is somebody who is from Iraq, so I'm actually an Iraq war veteran would be the right way to say it. I got out in 2008, so I've been out for a little while, and I joined the Marines out of Massachusetts in 2004, and I went and deployed to Iraq in 2005 to 2006, so to the beginning of 2006. I was in Fallujah, and my MOS, which is Marine Occupational Specialty, was actually data communications, which is computers. So we were supporting the networks and communications over there, about 4,000 people on Camp Fallujah. And as a secondary duty, I was also assigned to do checkpoint duty, which was to go outside the wire every day and go to one of several checkpoints where we would frisk women and children for explosive devices as they were coming on their way into the city.
Did you find a lot of them?
No, not at that time. Mostly what we found was women would have their kids, like, scrounge for copper wire and stuff like that. So we would have to confiscate, like, stuff that we knew was being used to make explosive devices. But we didn't have any major incidents while we were on checkpoint duty, and that's really a testament to the work of the companies that we replaced, because the companies before us, you know, you trade off about every 6 months or every 8 months or every year. The company that we replaced, you know, they had been getting mortared like every day, every wow. other day, really, really frequently, and we, you know, they had really reduced the violence that was going on in the city and around Fallujah. So we reaped the benefits of, you know, our predecessors doing their job really well.
Good.
Well, Jude, tell us a little bit your perspective, because I know Barbara and I have discussed this before and some of our other radio show about women in combat and how Panetta, just with the stroke of his pen, has decided that all these women can just go into the Marines and join the SEALs and do whatever they want to. And one of the Democrats even threw out a draft for
right. And that's a major consideration, because when you say that women can go into the combat units, and I stress the difference because we're talking about women being put in combat units and special forces. It's not the same as being in combat, okay? I'm considered a combat veteran because I was in the combat zone. It's not the same as being in combat or in a combat situation where you're in the infantry or you're in the special forces and you're charging in, you know, breaking down doors and climbing over walls and going hard and fast to kill, kill, kill. It's very different, even if you're in the combat zone, and you're in danger, but it's not the same at all as being in a combat unit. So that's a very important distinction, and what they try to say is women are already in combat. That's not the case. Women are in the combat zone, but women are not in combat, and women haven't been in a lot of combat fights. There's been a few instances of women being ambushed. Our team before us of women who were doing checkpoint duty, they got ambushed. They were targeted because they thought they were easy targets because it was a truck full of women. So there's the other thing is that, you know, lame duck Leon Panetta did this by tyrannical fiat, no debate, no testing, because they did not go, okay, we have a set of women, we're going to take 10 women from each, you know, unit or whatever, and we're going to let them test. And then we're going to give you the results and say, hey, women are making it. They said, well, women are in combat, which meaning women are in the combat zone, so they should be able to be in the elite unit. That's a big problem because no woman has been able to test into these elite units. And that's a very important point because the only women that we know of that have tried, a couple of women have tried the Marine Corps Infantry Officer Candidate School, and they flunked out. One flunked out the first day, the other flunked out after a week. The women can't do it. That doesn't mean that women are lesser human beings. It means that we have physical differences that limit what we can do, and that's biology. It's a straw man argument that a lot of the feminists, and it's all feminist officers, not enlisted, who are really making this argument, and it's the enlisted women who are going to have to pay for these feminist officers who want to up their careers, advance their own careers off the backs of women who are going to have to pay a really high price.
If I recall correctly, they wanted to lower the standards for women.
Well, that was immediately what the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said. You know, well, we'll look at the standards, and if those standards are too high for the women, we'll look at why those standards are so high, which is, I mean, it's just ridiculous on its face. First of all, if you're going to claim that women are equal and can do everything a man can do, you don't change the standards one bit.
Oh,
you keep
right.
them the same, and you say, if you can make it. But even if a woman can make it, that's where all these social, societal, cultural things that are very, very important in the culture of the military and the special forces and unit cohesion, that's where all that stuff comes in. Even if there's, you know, a highly skilled woman who can make it. The other thing is women in every branch of the military are already on a lower standard than the men. They don't have to perform, you know, 100% for a woman is a 74% for a man. And so the women are going to the combat zone having trained on a lower standard than their male counterparts. The other thing about the special forces is only a very tiny, tiny percent of the top-performing men make it through that training. And there's a great series called Surviving the Cut. It was, I think, the Discovery Channel did it. And they, for each hour episode, and I think they've had two seasons so far, they take a look at all these special forces, whether it's Navy SEALs or combat diver or Rangers or Marine Corps snipers. They go in and they show you the training of these guys, and they'll start with 100 guys, and like 10 will make it. And those 100 guys were already at the top of their officer fields in their branches of the military, and only a tiny, tiny percentage of those make it. It's so difficult. It's so arduous. And it has to be that arduous, you know, because we have to be the leanest, meanest killing machine that your taxpayer dollars can buy.
Right.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's not equality. If they lower the standards for you, then that's not equality. So what's, you know, with their lowering the standards
and
for women.
And it can't be. This is not about equality, and it can't be about equality. If you're too fat, you're not equal. You can't make it in the military. If you're too old, you're not equal. You don't make it into the military. You know, they've made it a bad word to say discriminating, but discriminating means you decipher. You decipher one thing from another. You set a standard. Some people can make the standard, other people can't.
But that's not discriminatory. If you have a set standard and everybody is held
it is
that
discriminatory.
Standard.
You're discriminating. You have to discriminate against people who cannot make that standard, and that's a good thing. It's what I'm saying is the word discriminatory is made into it is negative in certain contexts. But the real, you know, the classical definition, if you just look it up, it's an unemotional distinguishing. It means to distinguish between a couple of things.
Right. But
and
it's not
discriminatory
in the sense
that
they don't deliberately set out, well, we're going to make this so high so no women can make it. Because like you said, only, what,
right,
10% of men
make it so high so that, you know, we have the meanest, you know, hardest, most capable fighting machines. If I can do a little shameless pitch here for my blog,
right,
I wrote this as a four-part series. My blog is politicalanimalblog.com, and I wrote this as a four-part series. And in the fourth part, the reason I'm bringing it up is the fourth part concentrates on the men themselves, because these guys are totally awesome for being able to do just what most women cannot do. And that is wonderful that we have men that are willing to do that for us. It's hell. It's hell to go through the training. And then it's hell to train and train and train and train some more to get ready to deploy. And the fact that we have these, they are our supermen. You know, we watch movies like, you know, Iron Man and all these, you know, Marvel comic movies where somebody's a superhero. These guys are heroes for real. And at the root of it, this is all about bullying men. This is all about feminists bullying men in order to control them. And this is about changing the culture of the military. They're trying to dilute the military. They're trying to make it look more like society. And you can't have a military that looks like society. That would be your old fat, you know, unqualified people defending the nation. You don't want that. You can't have that. We need lean, mean guys to fight for us old fat guys who can't
yeah,
do it anymore.
Like,
you know?
That'd be me.
Right.
You know, I'm in that group.
Styles of life.
Not that I wouldn't pick up a gun to defend my country, but... You know?
Right, but if it came to, you know, climbing over 8-foot walls and,
right,
and running, you know.
That's called
so.
The hoist. You get me a hoist. I can't go over that wall. So, but I think it's really great that you're bringing some attention to this issue, because when I discussed it earlier, you know, if we're looking at the equality, you know, my son, who just turned 18, had to register for the draft, and my other sons had too, but I have granddaughters. And this was actually suggested, that they have to register for a draft. No.
Right, exactly. And
no.
You don't want a culture in which women are required to do that. And again, I point out that the officer feminists who especially are pushing this, they're past the draft age. They're also past the childbearing age. So, I mean, women join the military, and they often change their minds about what they want to do, or they meet somebody and they get married and they decide they want to have a family. And, you know, there are many jobs in the military such that you can, in some ways, stateside, it is like any other business where you go into work every day, and there are office very, very important jobs and supportive roles. Just like, you know, during World War I, World War II, it used to be free the men to fight. And all the jobs, you know, all the non-combat jobs, those are essential jobs that need to be done. But, you know, so women can still be in the military and be very supportive of war efforts and stuff without being in combat units and still be able to do these sorts of things like have a family. And have a family life. But when you're talking about that in the combat units, and the fact that women can get pregnant and men can't, women are a lot more prone to infections and stuff that men aren't. And you can be out for 30 days at a time. You can, you know, it's a lot more dangerous if a woman can't stop to pee than it is for a man. The women get, you know, bladder infections really easily. And all of a sudden, you know, in a couple of days, an untreated infection then becomes a kidney infection, you know, or the like, where you have to just get that person off the battlefield, and you've lost that person. Or, you know, men and women, what happens when you put them together? They have sex. And, you know, you're talking about part three in my series actually directly addresses The military's big sexual assault problem. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it's pretty well documented that a lot of it is swept under the rug. And now you're talking about putting females in even closer quarters where you don't even have a locked door between you and another guy. And, you know, that's just putting women in even more danger. And what some of these feminist officers are arguing is, oh, well, you know, if a woman wants to risk, they talk about rape in the context of being a prisoner of war, but it's the same thing. If a woman wants to take the risk of getting raped, then she should be able to do that. And that is a disgusting point of view, quite frankly.
Yeah, I agree.
They would never say that if they were, you know, depending on the argument that they decided to argue for.
Here's the problem with their argument. What if you're forcing my daughter into that position or my granddaughter into that position?
Through the draft, yeah?
Yes.
And then you're forcing somebody who oh, well, doesn't matter that you're a mother. We deploy mothers all the time. We're already deploying mothers, something
Absolutely.
That I point out in my writing. We're already deploying mothers. We're even deploying single mothers who are leaving their kids with a grandparent, not the father. You know, and it's already bad enough if one parent has to leave and you leave the kids with one parent. That's already hard enough. But when you're and at least I know the Marine Corps doesn't like to do that. You have to really jump through a lot of hoops to do that because they don't want to deploy the only parent.
Right.
But people do it.
Well, out of necessity sometimes, I think, but.
There's never a necessity for a mother to deploy.
So why do they do it?
For career advancement. And
oh, because the mother
more,
chooses?
It's, yeah.
Okay.
A mother is never, ever required.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
That's something new. I didn't know that.
I was...
Yeah.
Okay.
If you have kids and you're married, or you have kids and you're not married, you know... They would rather put you in a unit where you can stay still and be stable for your family. You can be a military breadwinner for a single parent, mother mm-hmm. or father for your kids. And like I said, there are many jobs that are such just like any other business where you go in, you know, Monday through Friday or whatever the days are, you know. And you have regular hours, and you're able to be, you know, a parent for your children after your work hours or before and
right.
after your work hours. But yeah, you have to go through a bunch of paperwork if you're a parent, even if you're not a single parent, and then you have to go above and beyond with a bunch more paperwork and proving who the caretaker is going to be. You know, if anything happens and stuff like that, and proving that it's all taken care of. You have to go way out of your way if you're a single mother in order to deploy. So there's never any reason except for career advancement. You get more pay when you deploy and stuff like that. And that's what a lot of these officers, these female officers, are arguing is that at the top echelon of the ranks is when you start needing combat commands in order to be like a four-star general. You can't be a four-star general, for example, without having led in the combat zone. But you can't do that if you can't be in certain MOSs. So if you can't be a Marine infantry officer, because the females can't make it through that, then you can't become a four-star general. So this only matters at the very, very, very top careerist people who want to go to Washington is really what it's about. And because women you don't have to deploy, even men don't have to deploy to have a successful military career.
Right.
So, in other words, for these very few percentage of women, power-hungry or whatever they may be, we have to put at risk our entire population of girls.
Yeah, for the draft, it's opening women up to the draft, and it did it without any sort of debate. It did it without any sort of testing. I mean, it's really shameless.
Is this like legal? I don't know if you know that or not, but I mean,
well, they've done it. So unfortunately, the ship has kind of sailed. I mean, they can reverse it, you know, but now you have Chuck Hagel and John Brennan and, you know, the likes of those guys. They're already sympathetic to our enemies. And so all this is just part and parcel of diluting and weakening our military.
Absolutely, because that's what it is intended to do, especially if you have to lower the standards to
right,
put the women on the
field.
Right,
which you would absolutely have to do. And the fact that the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff openly admitted that, rather than saying, oh, well, no, the women can do... They had just in the breath before said... women can do it. Women are already there. Women are already in the combat zone. You know, and then in the next breath saying, oh, well, if these standards are too high for women, we're going to have to look at why. I mean, that's absurd.
Right.
Well, we know why. We're not built like men, for one thing. We don't have the testosterone that men have. And, you know,
right.
Most of us aren't
6'4". We're lighter. Our skeletons are lighter. And this is also the argument that the advocates of this like to make, which is that these arguments are just passé. They will never not be true. Our skeletons will always be lighter than men. 70 years from now, 70 years ago, it doesn't matter when you're talking. A woman will always have about 25% more body fat, 20 to 40% less musculature, less endurance, less lung capacity. That's biology. There's nothing you can do to change that. And it doesn't matter if there's one woman out there who, you know, can run 100% PFT and you know, and can run as fast as a man. She can't do better than the best man. And it's the
right.
best men that we have to have in the special forces. And
right.
we don't want to throw men and women together in these tight, tight quarters where that's where
adrenaline is running high.
Yeah,
you might die. If you might die tomorrow, then this Navy SEAL
right.
who's a good-looking and a superhero
right.
starts to look
I mean,
pretty
it's,
good.
It's going
and
to happen. It's because if you're in life and death situations and to reaffirm life,
right, or what if it's not consensual?
Right,
and then you have to go. What are you going to say? Like, oh, I can't go on the run. You know, I can't go on this mission tonight because that guy raped me. And then
right.
you're going to put the commander in a position where he's got to take both people out of the field, off his team that he was just preparing to go on a raid in 2 hours.
Right,
and now he has to go. Oh my God, my mission is kaput. Because these two, because that guy decided to rape that girl, or those two decided to mess around, you know. I mean, so there's all sorts of stuff.
All sorts of
questions.
I mean, women
are already being sent off
the
battlefield for getting pregnant.
Yes, but let me remind everybody out there: the number to call is 718-305-7176. If you have a question for Jude, or you just want to join in this conversation, you're listening to Women Patriots on ConservativeNationRadio.org. 718-305-7176. Go ahead, Barbara. You had a question.
Oh, actually, there goes my air again.
her air conditioner is causing some noise in the background. So.
My stepdaughter, she was in the Air Force, and she got some medical. She had some medical issues while she was there, and she had a lot of issues. She was on the AWAC, and she didn't want to stay home and work in an office. She wanted to be deployed. Of course, like you said, not out in the field, but out in the field. And she was... Okay, Michael wants to come in. so we'll bring him in. But, you know, so she opted out at one point because her medical issues got really bad. And then they took one part, and it wasn't that part. So they took another part, and it wasn't that part. And, you know, she screwed up for life. She can't hold down a meal, a full meal. So, you know, it's really sad. But pushing people around like that, my other thought was if they're drafting, do you think they would give the women a choice to go on the front line at that point?
Well, that's another unanswered question, and which is, I mean, that's unfair to men. Men don't get that choice.
Right.
Exactly. And we're going to bring in Michael has a question for you, Jude, so let's just see what he has to say here.
Hi, Michael. You're live.
Michael, you're live.
Well, hello, ladies. How are y'all doing? And I don't know that I really have a question. I guess, first of all, just let me say to Jude, thank you so much for your service, Jude. We do appreciate it. And I was a little worried about getting in on this, not knowing how you felt on this subject, but I'm so relieved to hear you talking about what you're talking about. And you make a shameless plug on our network anytime you want to for your blog site. In fact, I'd like to see us get it on our website and put it out to other folks. You know, Jude is absolutely right here. There is discrimination, and there's what I think, Jude, correct me if I'm wrong, I think what they're attempting is social engineering, much in the way they tried to with the integration of the races during World War II, which is understandable. That was something.
Right,
that
because your race has nothing to do with your ability, but between men and women, your sex has everything to do with your ability.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, and let's be quite frank here. There has to be discrimination in regards to the genders, because Jude's absolutely right. Physically, there's just things that women are not capable of doing that men are. I was just an airborne infantry guy. I don't even recall and I'm not even a war veteran. I was in underneath President Reagan, so I was fortunate. We had a little thing called Grenada, Jude. It wasn't much. I'm an old guy, okay? So
thank you for your service.
You could kick my ass three times over. So, but, you know, I recall, and I'm dating myself here, I recall back, you know, I was a radio operator. 05B was my MOS. I carried a Prick 77 on my back with lithium batteries that were as big as a brick and weighed as much. Plus, mm-hmm. we had sea rations. So, you know, I can recall standing in a stick in that C-141 or that C-130, you know, and I've got a Weesey bag tied to the front of my ass, my M-1972 with my weapon, if I wasn't carrying an open weapon, a 100-150-pound rucksack full of lithium batteries, my personal gear, and sea rations, and that was a load mm-hmm. for me.
And, right.
And Jude's talking about, as you go up in special operations from airborne infantry to Rangers, and then further to the special forces, be it Green Berets, SEALs, the pararescue guys over in the Air Force and whatnot, exponentially that dropout rate is a lot bigger. And these are the best and the brightest of the men that are dropping out in armed services. Jude, you were talking about the issues that women have. I mean, I can recall back. I used to ride rodeo. When I was in the service, I was on the Army rodeo team. And I broke my back and ultimately got medically terminated from jump status, which in my mind ended my career. I at that point, I no longer wanted to be a leg, so I did my 6 years and I got out. But that last 3 years I was in as an E5, I was in a mixed-gendered unit. And inevitably, and this is not a poor reflection on the women, don't misunderstand me to our folks listening, aside from the stragglers that couldn't make a 10-mile force march in their CPOGs with a weighted-down rucksack, I had twice as many women in that deuce and a half at the back of a 10-mile force march. So mm-hmm. and that's not to say that, look, we've got Judy as a perfect example of someone that's been in the kill box. She's absolutely right. There's a big difference between being in the kill box and being an MOS that is that requires you, you know, Jude might be able to pick my nasty ass up and throw me over her shoulder with all her gear and drag my ass to safety. But if I'm in a combat unit, I want to know for sure that someone's going to be able to drag my ass to safety.
Jude?
Yeah.
What do you have to say to that? I mean, because, you know,
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, like I said, the women in every branch are already on a slightly lower standard with just the physical fitness tests that we're required to do. And what they do is, because women can't do the same standards as men, what they do is called gender norming, which is that they gender norm the test so that a woman's 100% effort is not the same as a man's 100% effort. What a woman gets an A for, a man would get a C for. Like, they studied this at West Point. They've done various studies. And so the women, I mean, to have done this, again, without testing, and he's exactly right. And we train this way. You know, in the Marine Corps, you do your 12 weeks of boot camp, take a bit of time off, and then you do the School of Infantry Training. It's called Marine Combat Training, where you go, and the guys, you know, it was guys who took Baghdad who trained me, my unit, when I was going through Marine Combat Training. Those are like the hardest chargers. I mean, I'm totally honored to have been trained by those guys. Those guys are hard as nails. I mean, you know, and none of the women, myself included, could match those men. And they were infantry. They were enlisted, but they were infantry guys. And what happens is, when you're in the combat zone, you're wearing 30 to 80 pounds of extra gear. More if you're a gunner, if you have if you're a radio operator, depending on what your job is. And now you're talking about, you know, a woman putting on 50 to 80 pounds extra. And then if you're in that combat situation, you have to be able to drag a guy who's probably already bigger than you, you know, who's probably already got 50 pounds on you, and he's another 100 pounds with his gear. You know, so you have to drag not just a 220-pound guy, but a 280 to 300 pound guy with all his gear, and you're supposed to drag him off just like they're supposed to drag each other off, you know, if somebody gets wounded. And
right.
You need to know 100% that you can have faith in the guy next to you. And what they're going to know now is that the standards have been lowered to accommodate the women.
And that's just absolutely.
I just want to follow up real quick, if I may. And with what I say, I in no way, shape, or form, I want to commend not only all of our soldiers, but our heroes like Jude here. I mean, Jude, you know, I would be the first to say there are certain combat, there's been some hellacious dead-eye dicks as far as helicopter pilots and pilots, aircraft pilots, that you know, are just as much the combat, quote-unquote, combat MOS as a grunt. It's just a matter, I think Jude's nailing it here, it's the matter of what are the physical requirements of that combat job.
Yep. Yeah, they all want to say, oh, well, if a woman can do it, she should be able to. Show me that woman.
Yeah,
they can.
Do it. Exactly, do it. And I, you know, I would have no problem.
Show me that woman, and then make a law about her, then pass it. You don't say, oh, well, we feel like doing this. So that, I mean, that's what they did. We feel like doing this.
Oh yeah, it was
but
their
that's
agenda.
They have an agenda, and if the agenda is about diluting the military, okay. Here's what you do. Here's how you destroy a country from within.
Right.
You repeal, don't ask, don't tell. So anybody who doesn't want a man coming on to him, you know, and is assaulted by a man or sexually harassed by a man, he's just a homophobe and his career is over. Then you put women in the combat units, you lower the standard, so the greatest fighting force in the world is now 50% weaker. You know, you create a stigma. Janet Napolitano has said that returning Iraq and Afghanistan veterans are the most likely to be the next terrorists.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's
crazy.
That's me, you know. So you create a stigma about returning Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. And then I actually wrote about this today in terms of, you know, when a bomb goes off and you've stigmatized the military because they think, you know, the military is too male, too white, too Christian, too Southern, you know, and they want to change that artificially, even though actually, in fact, the military is the most diverse business that you could get a job in. Because you all have to work together no matter what, and that's one of the beautiful things about the military.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you know, Jude, but one of our show hosts, Carl Higby, is a former Navy SEAL, and he weighs 240, and he's, I think he said he was 6'4". So you show me the woman that's going to be able to heft him up, because, you know, sometimes you got to carry that man off the battlefield. And this was
right.
The problem he had. Was, you
and,
know,
and it's not sometimes. You have to have already proven that you can do it. That's what their special forces training is. It's showing that you can do it over and over again, and after you haven't slept for 3 days, et cetera, et cetera, and so forth.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's very few men, like you said, that can do that, let alone a woman.
Right. Yeah. Well, everyone should watch that series, Surviving the Cut. It's, first of all, great. It'll just motivate you, and it'll make you just proud of our special forces guys.
As I can say for most of our patriots, as all of our patriots here on Conservative Radio, we are so proud of all of you, even the women and you, Jude, and all those who give their service to
watching what they go through just to become that, I mean, it'll make you appreciate them even more and go, wow, like, I couldn't even do that in a million years.
Oh, no, I know, because, like, you know, they hold them underwater and they can't breathe, you know, they do crazy stuff. You know?
Right.
So. But would you mind us actually linking your blog on our
network? Would absolutely love it. Yeah, it's politicalanimalblog.com, and if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, it's Jude_Eden, and you'll know if you find me by the little bio that's there. But
yes, because amid all this grabbing for our guns from the law-abiding citizens, and like you said, you're on a terrorist list. Barbara and I are on a terrorist list.
Yay!
You're in good company here. And yet, you know, we're not the ones out there shooting people up or blowing things up. But, you know, it's pretty sad. But
yeah, you know, I point that out. I wrote kind of a hard-hitting article today. I'm just, you know, sickened about Boston. Boston's where my mom's side of the family is from. And I spent, you know, half my life in Massachusetts. And, you know, it's just, it's utterly sickening that, you know, they cast the people, you know, Tea Partiers who have not done anything violent, who never use violence to get, to achieve what they want, what we want to accomplish. We try to influence government. We're sitting here writing our congressmen and stuff and complaining loudly and never using violence. And we're not allowed to say, you know, the main suspects would be jihadists who always use violence, who always use bombs. You cannot name one Tea Partier who has ever used a bomb about anything, you know. But that's their modus operandi. There again, it's a stigmatization, and it's creating a culture that people believe in. And, you know, we wouldn't have the low information voter without the mainstream media.
Absolutely. You are kind of on the same page that we are here. You know, we have Karen Sigmund's been a on our show before, Rage Against the Media, but it's just the misinformation that flows, and that for some reason these people just either...
they've been since Woodrow Wilson, they've been slowly taking out critical thinking.
Yes.
You know, they started with the reading and the Dewey Decimal System, and it's funny because I just read, my husband is an immigrant from Brazil, and he was doing some English classes reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and I couldn't remember, I read it like, you know, 20 years ago, so I didn't really remember it, so I wanted to read it again, and, you know, it's so funny when they're, and that's, you know, takes place in the, by then I guess it's the late 50s, early 60s, you know, and they're talking about the education system and how she's told, how Scout is told not to let her dad read to her at night, you know, and that's what my mom was told. And my mom, like I said, she grew up in Boston and, you know, they would take their cues from the Harvard School of Education. When my mom was in grade school, they were telling my grandmother, her mother, don't read to your children. You'll ruin them. We're the professionals. Leave it to us.
Oh, my. And this was going on all those years ago. See, I'm in Indiana, and my youngest is 18, and, of course, they tell us to read to our kids here.
Right. Well, now, yeah, you have, what is it? The more you know, with the little star with a rainbow following it, you know, read to your kids. Yeah, now they're making up for damage that they themselves did. That's a government. The more you know is government sponsored. Well, they created that problem, and it was quite deliberate. And now they have your children in their clutches, you know. And in a way, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for. Your child goes to that government-run school the next day.
Right. Which is the big issue we're having with Common Core and C-Scope and some of these government programs they're trying to implement in different states.
Exactly. And, you know, I grew up with, my mom was fighting that system all while I was in school. And I actually, by the time I dropped out of high school and public school at 15, by that time, it was a relief to them. I would come home every day, and we would have our deconstruction time.
Wow. Well, of course, Massachusetts is one of those liberal states that...
Well, this was Michigan, because I didn't go to... My mom is from Boston, but by the time I was born... Yeah, my folks met in Boston, and my brother was born there, and then my dad had finished his PhD, and... First, they went to Montreal and then Halifax, Nova Scotia, and that's where I was born. So he actually teaches at Hillsdale College now, and when I was 10 years old, that's when he was offered a position at Hillsdale. So we moved from Massachusetts to Nova Scotia and then to Michigan. So when my mom was fighting the school system, you know, was in my memory
in
from
Michigan.
When I was 10 years old in Michigan.
Wow.
Yep.
That's my neighbor to the north.
But it's ubiquitous. We're talking about government-run schools. It's ubiquitous across the nation.
Yes. I think, well, and I've said this on our show, we have homeschoolers to thank for a generation of children that are critical thinkers and that...
And they're fighting that.
Because of them, we do have a future because of those who have chose, you know, I think back in the 80s is when I first remember coming about to take their kids out of the schools and start teaching them themselves. And
and, you know, I think there's a lot of parents that really want to do that, but it's really difficult. Now everybody feels like they have to, you know, both parents have to work and everything like that, and it can be a really tough choice. But I hope that more and more people are seeing the damage that's being done. The kids aren't being educated, so you can do at least as badly as the public school system.
Well,
you know?
Here was my problem. It was like I probably would have killed my children if I would have had to homeschool them.
No, you can't.
I had four of them in the
home. We did it for
But
we did it for a little bit when I dropped out at 15, so I finished my sophomore year, and I was lucky because to be in the environment of Hillsdale College, I did some homeschooling, and then I was doing, like, all my extracurriculars at Hillsdale, and then I was taking classes and kind of just moved seamlessly in there. But, you know, it's... The big secret is that you actually don't need a GED or a high school diploma to go to college, and you don't need, you know, nowadays, I mean, a college education is terrible, and it's just a piece of paper. You can actually get more by reading, you know, reading and writing yourself and studying. You can get the books. You know, if you can read, you can educate yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the sad thing is you can't get a job without that little piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It's true. But
it's kind of how they're reaching and grabbing. But there are ways around that also. I mean, you just got to teach your kids at home. You know, you got to teach them your faith. You got to teach them their core values. You've got to watch what they're bringing home.
Yeah, you got to be very, very involved, and you've got to be tough. You
right.
Because it's tough to, you know, I mean, and everybody rebels against their parents. It's funny how you see, like, kids whose parents were liberal, they become conservative, and kids whose parents are conservative, they become liberal, and usually then become conservative again later. But it's like you gotta fight through the natural, like, teenage hormonal stages and the ego battles and the... Yeah, but it's really worth it later, you know.
Yes.
But I mean, I don't know. The kind of people who
Absolutely.
Are listening to your show probably already know this, and they're probably more likely the tough love kind of folks.
Mm. Once in a while, we do get some trolling through that we hope they're listening and gaining a little bit of knowledge, you know, from the show itself, because that's why we do this. Not only that, it's just to tell people how they can get involved. Now, is there any kind of group organizing to try to, or are you just blogging, or, you know, with this military thing, is there something we can do?
You know, it's really, like I said, you know, Leon Panetta did this by tyrannical fiat. He just said, I say, therefore it is so.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, now it's really up to each branch, and, like, I'm very proud of my Marine Corps is a commandant, I think it's General Amos now, has said, you know, we will not lower our standards, and they haven't yet. You know, the other, you know,
Do you think they're going to be forced to?
Absolutely. And the way it's going to go is that they're going to say, you know, higher ups are going to say, okay, we're doing this, and we want to see such and such percentage success rate, and we're reviewing next year's budget.
Right.
Just so you know.
So
you'll know that next year's budget depends on you giving them a certain success rate, and you can only get a certain success rate with women in combat units if you lower the standards so that they can make through the training. So unfortunately, that's likely. I hope, you know, I wrote to General Amos to thank him for not lowering the standards, and I mean I'm big into letter writing. I'm into Heritage Action. The Heritage Foundation has a sister organization called Heritage Action, and they have a Sentinel program, which is all about annoying the hell out of your representatives and just getting vocal, getting together. Well, you know, we've done it. You get on Twitter and you start using that social media. Look, we've just shamed the media into covering the Gosnell trial that they weren't doing. And if it weren't for social media, if it weren't for people saying, shame on you for not covering this, you're deliberately ignoring it. And it's the same with your representatives. They're trying to use Twitter to attract people. We just had a Twitter town hall. Or actually our Senator Kay Hagan, she's a Democrat, liberal Democrat. And she was advertising, oh my gosh, if you did a search for Kay Hagan veterans, because it was supposed to be on veterans issues and military family issues. And if you did a search on it, you found two pages. She was totally, like, publicizing and publicizing and publicizing the fact that, you know, she hasn't done squat for veterans in the 4 years that she's been in office, but now suddenly, you know, everybody's pissed about the disgusting, almost a million backlog of veterans claims,
yeah,
you know, under Obama and under her watch, you know, and we have North Carolina is a huge veteran and military community. Well, you know, we got on Twitter and Democrats were desperately trying to get other Democrats on the Twitter feed because tons of conservatives were getting on and asked about 100 questions. She managed about the 100 questions that conservatives were asking about veterans issues, about the Second Amendment, about, you know, about the VA backlog, all this different stuff. She managed to find, like, a couple of the softball questions that weren't from military or veterans. Or she took, like, she took six questions, you know. Two of them were from people, from journalists from Washington, D.C. Two of them were from Democrat operatives. And she took one from an actual veteran that she softballed and didn't really answer the question. Oh, the letter that I wrote to the Veterans Affairs, you know, is having some impact. Really? The letter that you wrote last week and you haven't done crap the last 4 years for veterans? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
It's
but
amazing, isn't
the
it?
The lesson is, and then we publicized how her Twitter town hall went. It was an utter failure for her.
I didn't even know she had a Twitter town hall.
Right. Well,
or Barbara would have been there.
That's the great thing on being on Twitter, and that's also the great thing about being part of Heritage Action is they, first of all, have a bead on all the data. What the it's sort of addressing everything policy by policy, week by week, and which I find, you know, I was really kind of wondering, you know, we all kind of felt lost a little footing after the election, you know, feeling like, wow, you know, I put all this effort and into trying to get good people elected and really had a hard time, and we can just barely get voter ID passed. I mean, it's ridiculous, but with this, I really felt like I found something where I could put my energy to a useful end, you know, by
going.
Is
that like Heritage, is it heritageaction.com, or do they have a...
I think it's heritageaction.org. If you go, let me see if I can get it. But it's through, it's a sister organization of the Heritage Foundation. So if you look up Heritage...
Because the more people we have doing this, the better. And you're absolutely right. We've been doing this through, there's multiple venues out there doing this. You know, you have Patriot Voices with Rick Santorum. You have Rage Against the Media with Karen Sitzman. They're, I never say
they're
that,
doing
right?
That now, actually.
Yes, they go on to these, you know, the network sites and they put out truths. And so there are a lot of organizations. And this, I think this is what we got to do. I think this is how we get the message out.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's heritageaction.com. And they do, you know, Heritage does the scorecard on all the congressional representatives. And they have a dashboard. You put in your zip code. And so they'll bring up your elected officials and what you can, you know, email blast and call them about, you know, the issue that's on the table right now.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, it makes a difference. If they get people, you know, bunches of people calling them, and of course, you know, and even if it's a Democrat, like my representative is Mike McIntyre, and he boasts being a conservative Democrat. So even if they're conservative, we all know that, or sorry, even if they're liberal, All the liberals run as conservatives. Suddenly, they're God-fearing hunting people. You know, when they're running for office,
right?
They found,
absolutely.
Suddenly they find Jesus and they, you know, they pick up a gun.
And yet,
you know,
the Republicans are the hypocrites, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, and unfortunately, they're not much better. I mean, Richard Burr just promised us that he was going to stand with the filibuster against the Second Amendment. and then he turned coat and did the opposite. And so, you know, but there again, you know, we're all just, in addition to letters and phone calls, they're using that social media, Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, we need to get on there too. Go ahead.
He actually posted on Facebook, and I got an email from him too earlier. Well, let me go ahead and look for that. He doesn't want. I gotta find it. He's not going for this bill. He's gonna go against it. What he voted on was
the cloture, so they could discuss it.
That's what he said. It's BS. That's a BS answer. What he has said is, oh, I want to get it on the floor so that we can debate it. No, you should have stood against it.
They are only two votes shy. They're 2 votes shy of passing it. So we need to keep on these senators.
I don't know if you listen to Bill LeMay, but
no.
I do. He's a radio host. Talk show host, and I listened to him, and last week he had said that he made a deal with the devil. He made a deal with Harry Reid.
Oh, God. Why would anybody do that?
To make amendments. And that's why. Oh, okay. Awesome. Cool. Got a
Barbara,
great message.
What'd you get? Come on, Barbara.
I got a text. Carl's going to be calling in.
Carl Higbee?
Yeah.
Awesome. Carl's the one we were talking about, Jude. He's the former Navy SEAL. So it'd be interesting to, you know, from his perspective also, because you know what we were talking about. This is our 6'4", 240-pound guy.
He just recently had a little baby girl.
Yes, he did. She's so cute. And he's holding her in his big hands. I mean, she looks like this little miniature doll because he's got these But we did ask him to call in if he could, because this is a serious issue, this women in the military, and it endangers not only our girls, but also, you know, the men that are out there, because men have a protective instinct toward women. It's not going to go away. It's inbuilt. It's the natural
thing. That's another issue, is that, you know, they're trying to desensitize men and say, you know, oh, well, you can just overcome. Because, you know, they always bring up the other countries that have integrated women into the infantry. Well, every country that has done that has found that it's a disaster in a combat situation.
Right.
Israel did it in the 1948 war. They said never again. It was a disaster. A woman screams, the men will abandon the mission in a way that they don't when they're fighting with each other, you know, and they're afraid the women are going to get raped, and they're right. And, you know, the feminists want to argue, oh, well, you know, male prisoner of war get raped just as much as women, which is that's false on its face. You know, it's bad for society if we start trying to get men to turn off the most wonderful instinct that they have,
absolutely,
which is to protect women.
Absolutely.
Right.
Which, you know what, on that subject, I want to bring up, because we're desensitizing our whole culture, not only with the Hollywood shows, but, you know, with the lack of respect for life, trying to teach them that they're equal. And there was that girl that hung herself, that 15-year-old girl, or was she 16? A 15-year-old girl hung herself in California. Now, I have a couple of issues with this problem. She was at a party, and she was drinking. Okay, those parents are responsible. But 3 16-year-old boys, while she was passed out drunk, did lewd things to her. And then they posted the pictures, and she hung herself. This is because men aren't taught that respect of the women, and, you know, that nurturing of the women. And if we start doing this with our military, Jude, it's, I think we're going to even see that even further.
And since 1970s feminism, the women have been shamed about nurturing.
Which is crazy.
In other words, that, you know, being a mother is just barefoot in the kitchen and all this utter,
right.
You know, just
nonsense.
Retarded BS, you know, it's retarded BS.
Right.
They've turned the most important job in the world, you know, and it happened because, what's her name, the feminine mystique,
which one?
You know, she was a failure as a wife and a mother, and she turned that into a societal problem, even though it was her problem. And, you know, so now we've taught women that they shouldn't become nurturers, that they should become businessmen, that they should become war fighters, they should be this and that, and that they can be. And then we, you know, you notice that in all the TV shows and the movies, it's the women who are saving the men now. It's always the women who are saving the men, and you have La Femme Nikita, and you have all this stuff, and that's BS. A man, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a black belt. You still can't take on, a black belt can't take on a Navy SEAL. You know, a black belt can't take on, you know, a female black belt does not take on a thug in the street that wants to kill her.
Right.
It just, you know, it doesn't work like that. And I spent 5 years before the Marine Corps becoming a black belt. So...
You speak with authority on this subject. So,
right. I wish I could take on a Navy SEAL, but the fact of the matter is, you know, Michelle Yeoh, who's reputed to be like the only, she's the female martial artist who's in the movies, and she is reputed to be the only person who might be able to best Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
I don't really think so. I think that's just hype.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe Chuck Norris, now that he's in his 70s.
Is he in his 70s now?
He is in his 70s, yes.
Roundhouse.
So, yeah. I think he's probably in still pretty good shape, too. So.
It's not like that. And we're feeding women, we're feeding girls all these images of, you know, women as badasses who just pick up a weapon and, you know, they just, you know, whip these guys' butts. And it's just not like that, to learn to do that. I mean, so I became a black belt, and then a couple of years later I joined the Marine Corps. I did 3 out of the 5 levels of the Marine Corps martial arts. So I stopped at the level where, you know, you're starting to get hurt more and more. And so they have, at the 4th level, is where you know going in that you're going to break at least one bone. So I was like, you know, I'm just going to do level, you know, up to here, level 3, and that's badass enough for me, you know. But but that's the kind of, I mean, so you know that's serious. And I know some female Marines who became Marine Corps martial art black belts, and that is, you know, that's freaking amazing.
Right.
You know, but you know, they're still not better than the male black belts.
Yeah. I grew up with 3 brothers, and I think I'm a badass.
I don't know.
I put up a good fight.
I just pull out my mommy voice and that mommy look. No.
Yeah. You know, there's something else that I should say with regard to women in the military and all this kind of stuff is that, you know, I think that how you're treated as a woman, there are people who, for whom, like, sexual assault happens, and they just came out with a documentary called The Invisible War, which is about sexual assault in the military and stuff. I never knew anybody who was sexually assaulted. I think how you how you act and how you present yourself has everything to do with how you're going to be treated or respected in the military. I was never, ever disrespected by any of my Marines or any Marines. And if they, you know, I was older than all of them when I got to the fleet because I joined kind of late. And, you know, I just sort of said when I got to the fleet, you know, gee, you can call me the grandma of this platoon. I expect gentlemanly conduct. And if they so much as, like, you know, if they thought I could hear them saying something disrespectful of women, they would fall over themselves apologizing, you know. And I just think the world of my Marines. I also think the world of my fellow female Marines. You know, I think there's, you know, women are great at a lot of different jobs. Women are great shooters. Women are great at intelligence. These are really, really important jobs that are done in the combat zone. You know, I just think there's so many big problems with women in the combat units that we can show because we have a track record because women are deploying to combat
mm-hmm.
zones.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And
so when more women are in the combat zone and on the front line, they'll obviously be killed. I didn't say that right. But there'll be more, you know, God forbid things happen, more women will get hurt, and they'll say, oh, see, we can't fight in a war, and then they'll specified the military even more.
Yeah, they'll say it's because of military culture, this and that, which, of course, it's not. It's because women, we shouldn't be sending women, we certainly shouldn't be sending mothers to fight our wars. And it's not like there's not enough men. You know, that's another false argument or strawman argument, is that you widen the pool, you know, of people from whom you're recruiting. To open these jobs to women. You could cut women out of the military altogether and you would still have enough men going for the military. You'd probably actually have more and they'd be manlier.
Which we're not
but,
suggesting.
No,
I
say that in jest because I do think there are important roles. I want to fight for my country. I wanted to fight for my country. I wanted to deploy. I mean, I joined the Marine Corps wanting to deploy. It's sort of like, you know, I don't believe women should be in combat, but I'm glad I got the chance to go. I'm a fighter, and I want to fight for my country and fight for my country in any way that I can. So
yeah.
I understand that desire.
But you didn't expect them to lower those standards just so you could
exactly right.
prove
exactly
yourself
right.
to be equal when, you know, that's not equality.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
So.
If you lower, you know, it's all about bullying and then claiming to be the victim at the same time with any, you know, feminist tribe like that. It's, you know,
right.
Oh, we're equal, we're tough. But, oh, you got to lower the standards because it's not fair that we can't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Mother Nature ain't fair. She's a fickle bitch.
That's right. She's not fair, and heaven forbid if a woman's having PMS on the battlefield. You know, you didn't want to cross some people.
You know, I write about that, and a lot of women hate me for writing about that. But that's, if you're talking about putting women into combat, you have to think about every single little thing. And, you know, if women are getting pulled off out of the combat zone for getting pregnant, you know, and there are things that happen to your body when you're menstruating. You know, I bring up, it's funny how many how many women, I publish also on westernjournalism.com. That's a conservative thing.
Yeah,
I probably got the most comments when I published my first part one of The Problems of Women in Combat. And you'd be amazed how many women swear that women don't get PMS. It's utterly ridiculous. And I'm like, you know what? do a search on PMS, and there's
no
like 900 entries. They even have little notes saying, we did not include all the entries that there are on this issue and how to treat the symptoms and how to deal with the symptoms of PMS and the swelling and the fatigue and the pain. And that's just, it's something that we deal with. Now, I dealt with it. Nobody ever carried my load. I always did my stuff. I always had a first-class PFT. But I had to work through it. And it's funny how many people say, oh, well, she must be a whiner since she's talking about the fact that women get PMS. But it's like, you know, look, I'm acknowledging something that is a fact of life. Every woman knows it. Men all know it. Men all know what it's like to be around, gosh, I had a, I won't tell the rank because anybody who might listen to this who knows my, the rank will know who I'm talking about, but someone who was in charge, a female, we all knew when it was that time for her, and she was hell on wheels. I would never want that woman to be in charge if I was going into a raid. I would I mean, we hated it as it was. She was awful. You know, she was a bad leader already, but you take somebody who's a bad leader, and then they're a staff NCO or they're an officer, and they're in charge of you or whatever, or you have to go, you know, into combat with them. And that is just, I wouldn't trust her judgment when she was during that time making everybody's life miserable, making petty bad decisions, you know. And it's unfortunate. I don't, you know, I'm not, it sucks that that happens.
Right.
And it sucks. But it happens.
And Jude, I would get mean. But anyway, Carl is here, so let me go ahead and bring him on.
Carl,
that's a good segue for a question, right?
Hey, Carl.
Hey, folks, how you doing?
You turned in right at the woman time. We were talking about that PMS that doesn't exist.
I just came in. I heard bashing officers and PMS, and I was like, man, I'm definitely in the right place.
Well, Carl, we have Jude Eden
with Iraq us in 2007, and he spent 7 months.
Yes, 7 months in Baghdad.
And you were 9 months on a SEAL team?
I was a SEAL for 9 years, so I did the deployment 2009 and 2007, both 7 months in 07 and 8 months in 09. So
wow,
to Fallujah.
Thank you.
So,
yeah, thank you very much.
Just
yes,
another job,
Carl.
But I kind of came in the middle, and you guys were talking about some women on the rag, and then you're backing off. Kind of fill me in. You know, I'm not sure how it got there, but
this was really late. I mean, we in the beginning of the program, we've been talking for a great long time now, but. You know, I was bringing up all, you know, pretty much the gamut of the issues. The fact that lame duck Leon Panetta said, I say, therefore it is. And this was done, as I say, by tyrannical fiat without any testing because you can't show me the woman who can make it through Navy SEAL training. And, you know, they just... the women in every branch are already on a slightly lower standard with the physical fitness test and such in every branch. So even though women go to the combat zone, it's not at all the same as going into combat. And we're there having been trained on a slightly lower standard than our male counterparts, and it's nothing near the special forces or the infantry training. So it's a totally false premise to say, which is what they like to argue, that women are already in combat, they're already fighting. It's not true. Women are in the combat zone, you know, and doing entry checkpoint duty like what I did and frisking women for explosive devices, convoys, that's dangerous. It's not the same as going hard and fast to kill, you know, in raids. And
you're absolutely right. I mean, it was funny because I was just on another radio program right before this one talking, Renegade Nation, talking about the same exact thing. And we were talking about it. And I have no problem taking orders from a woman in a corporate job or anything like that. But it's, you know, and our own SEAL Admiral said, you know, I think women will make fine SEALs one day. And I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? You're going to crush unit coercion, you know?
That's where all, you know, where you could find me the one woman who might be able to make it through Navy SEAL training, that's only 50% of it. The other 50% of all the reasons that they should not put women into the combat units are all the unit cohesion, the social, the cultural things that create problems. Yeah. Everything from relationships to sexual assault to, you know, not putting people together where you don't even have any more, you know, a closed door between people.
Exactly. I mean, and it this goes even further. I mean, this tacks onto the don't ask, don't tell policy. It's like they're looking to destabilize, you know, the military and units in general. And
everything.
It's, you know what, like, fine. If you want to be a woman in combat, okay, fine. But you guess what? Like you were saying earlier, the standards shouldn't change. Why? You were Marines, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So why should the standards be different for a woman and a man at the same age or any age? Because guess what? A gunshot wound knows no gender and it knows no age group.
Exactly. And if you have to pick up that guy, you know, where you already have 50 or 80 or more extra pounds of gear on yourself, and now you have to pick up a guy who already has at least 50 pounds on you and then has all his gear, you know, and
right.
you just have to look at that guy and know that they can take you off the battlefield if, you know, when things go haywire. But it's all about bullying men in order to control them. It's what the feminist movement is about. It's why feminist officers who are both past childbearing age and past the draft age are the ones who are pushing it so that they can become, because they want to be 4-star military generals and they want to go to Washington. And it's going to be female enlisted who are going to pay the price for those women to get that rank.
Right. Jude, have you read my book?
No. Tell me about
Battle on the Home Front. Battle on the Home Front. You got to talk. I break all this stuff down, and there's a whole chapter called Military Bureaucracy and Its Deficiencies, and I smash the upper echelon.
Nice.
Yeah, and which is ultimately why they threw me out of the military. But because of that chapter.
Well, that's, you know, well, and of course, it's like you repeal, don't ask, don't tell. So anybody doesn't want a man coming on to them or anybody who gets sexually harassed by a man, well, you're just a homophobe and your career is over. And then
that's
you
what my
lower
commanding
the
officer
standards,
told me,
you put women in.
Yeah, he told me you're a homophobe. I said, yeah, I am. I hate gay people. Like, sorry. You know, I don't.
He hates.
He like,
hates
Carl,
fat people too, dude. Carl is not one of our most tactful show hosts. So go ahead.
Well, I'll lay it out for the audience right now. I really don't care for fat people because they're fat and selfish and in the way. I don't like Muslims, and I don't like gay people. Plain and simple.
But even though I am fat, I'm fat. Carl
You're short for your
likes
weight.
Me, but he thinks I need to lose that weight. And he respects me because I'm his elder.
I do.
Now, that being said, go on.
I totally forgot what I was going to say, because anytime you get me thinking about fat people, I lose my mind. And,
I'm working on it, Carl. I'm working on it.
Yeah, the women in combat thing, like, I'm 240 pounds. You know, without it, you know, with just my T-shirt on. So you throw a kit on me, an automatic weapon, comms. I mean, I'm pushing close to 300 pounds. And, you know, is it really the place? Like, is it a statement or is it a desire? So,
right. Well, it's all about diluting the military. It's all about trying to make the military look more like society, which is, of course, the last thing you want, because that's your fat, old, you know, unqualified people that need hardcore killers to defend them because they can't fight for themselves. I'm working on becoming a fat person myself, and I need guys like you to defend me now. Well, no, it's not totally true. I got out after I got thyroid cancer, which is your thyroid is like your body's compass. So with that gone, it's like I can't work out the way I used to and all this kind of stuff. And it's to that point where I'm like, wow, like if I, you know, I'm one of those people who needs somebody else to fight for me because I can no longer, you know, hardcore fight for myself. I mean, I used to be a black belt. I did three of the levels of the Marine Corps martial arts. I was, you know, hard charger and everything. And then something, you know, happens. And just like that, you could need the leanest, meanest fighting force that your taxpayer dollars can buy, you know, to defend this country. And now you look at, you know, the Boston bombing, and who are people going to look to when what used to be the greatest fighting force in the world has now been weakened? The unit cohesion went out the window with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The standards are getting lowered. Or the standards were already lowered.
Yeah.
As we had that double, we have, you know, we have right now the double standard between men and women. Which, you know, I think there's a place for that because there's lots of jobs that people who aren't the leanest, meanest can do in the military. That's about, you know, the freeing the men to fight or those supportive administrative desk job type roles that,
right.
you know, that a lot of people can do. And we need people to do that. So there, in a way, there kind of is a place for a double standard, but not certainly in the combat units. And, you know, they want to whine and bully at the same time. They want to say, oh, women are tough, women can do it, without being able to show any women that have done it.
The
couple that have tried in, the couple tried, the Marine Corps Infantry Officer Candidate School, and one flunked out after the first day, and one flunked out after the first week. The women can't do it, and they're continuing to publish, you know, that women keep failing. Women keep failing at it, so they want to say, right, and they want to say that, you know, women can do it, women are in the combat zone, but, oh, it's not fair that the standards are so high. It's like,
yeah,
you idiot, it's not fair. That's why we need 6-foot-tall, 240-pound guys who can
because
do it. God bless them.
It's because you can't do it.
But
well, ladies, I don't mean to cut you short, but I actually gotta jump off. But I really appreciate having me on. Jude, get with me on Facebook, Carl Higbee, and we'll talk more about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to meet
you.
It'd
be great to have a call into your show, Carl, at some time. But thank
absolutely.
You for stopping by.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. We'll talk more.
All
thanks,
right,
Carl.
Thank you.
Well, Jude, I want to thank you so much for calling in tonight. You're welcome to just drop in anytime. Our lines are always open. We're here every Tuesday. We cover a wide variety of subjects, a lot of what we touched on tonight, plus more. But if any issue arises where you need some help, just give us a call. We'll give a shout out.
I will. I certainly will. And definitely, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I just had a blast, and it was so fun to be able to talk about the whole, like, a whole gamut of things. And
we didn't even get to menopause yet, Jude.
I'm too young to talk about that with any authority.
I know, but you don't want a general going through menopause.
That's a whole different show altogether.
Do you want to go ahead and do your website, your blog spot?
Yeah, politicalanimalblog.com. If you just look up Political Animal on Facebook, you can find it. You can find me on Twitter, Jude_Eden. So it's Jude _Eden.
Yeah, I unmuted them.
And check out Heritage Action. I mean, it's a really helpful network and tool and way to, you know, get in the action of affecting policy and, you know, being a buzzing in your representatives' ears, you know.
Absolutely.
And then get other people to do it around you.
And here's what I just wanted to say, that because we talked about that earlier and I wanted to mention it. Actually, there is a video of Ronald Reagan back in the 60s. He says, write your congressman. If you don't get the answer you want, write them again. If you don't get the answer you want, write them again. And this is what we're doing with things, you know, this is what you're talking about with that Heritage
Action.
Yes, Action, and these other places that we're writing, we're sending, and you just got to pester the heck out of them. And this was
you gotta criticize when they're wrong, and you gotta praise them when they're right. Definitely
Absolutely.
Give them the praise when they do something that's right.
Absolutely, and we got to get rid of these so-called Republicans that are not out for the benefit of the people. We got to get
that.
It's worse.
They are worse than our opponents, because they might as well be our opponents.
Right.
Don't be on our side and then do everything that our opponents that we're working against.
Absolutely. And it can happen. We did get rid of Senator Lugar here in Indiana. Unfortunately, our Tea Party candidate didn't beat the Democrat, but there's a whole lot of reasons for that. He was a good man. But unfortunately, at least you know you got a Democrat.
We had the same thing here with Ilario Pontano, who ran for Congress in the 7th District. He is an absolute prince. He's a warrior. He's a hard charger. He's a great, all-around conservative. You know, he's in the caliber of Alan West and Ted Cruz and these guys. And, you know, the RINOs chose somebody else. They redrew the lines. And, they just undermined the heck out of the whole thing, and the RINO lost to the Democrat in the end.
Here's what happened here. Senator Lugar, being the poor sport that he was after serving, I think he was in 36 years. He was there forever. Nobody would even challenge him. Being the poor sport that he was, would not support or endorse Richard Murdoch, who was the challenger. We had actual Lugar people who would not vote for Richard Murdoch because they were upset that he ran against Lugar in the primary. That's what we're up against. But it can be done. And I think we're all going about the right cause. And we thank you so much for bringing out this blog, because we don't hear a lot about it, Jude, but this is going to affect our grandchildren, our grandbaby girls. And, you know, Carl, he's got that little baby girl, and I'm sure it weighs on his mind.
Absolutely.
If they ever institute that draft to
well,
come back.
Well, it's everything. It's immediate. It's affecting his brothers right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? And
safety.
And it's just on down the line. Well, thank you so much for having me. I just had so much fun. And thank you for all that you do. Thank you for promoting my blog and everything.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get that on Women Patriots or on our front page there. We've got several connections. We'll get it in there. So thank you again. Feel free to call in anytime. Hook yourself
thank
up
you
with
so
Carl.
Much.
Carl, you'd be great for Carl's show on Thursday. So be sure and hook up with him. So we want to thank everybody that
awesome.
Was here tonight listening in. We want to thank our special guest, Jude Eden. We want to thank Carl Higbee for calling in, Michael for calling in, and everybody for listening. We're going to take it out with a song. Tune in next week. We have a fan of Sarah Palin, run sarahpalin.net. So if you're a Sarah Palin fan, you're going to be want to sure and join us next week. He's also a sports broadcaster and journalist. Going to be joining us next week. Kevin Scola. I'm going to say Scola. Barbara, any last thoughts before we're out of here tonight?
No, actually, you know, what Jude was talking about was my very first thought of women in military.
Yes.
But because I haven't been there and actually experienced it, it was great to have her come in and explain what she was talking about that confirmed exactly what
Absolutely.
I thought it
did. Things I didn't even know. So it was really, really great to have her. So think about it, folks. It's not a good thing. And it may be something we need to start pushing our congressman about, because there's got to be something that can be done, because I know the president doesn't run the I mean, he's the commander-in-chief, but there's got to be something that can be done about this issue, and we're probably going to have to investigate that a little more. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.